Welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. The different stories around addiction has been one of the recurring themes throughout the seasons here on Base Camp. Why? Well, for one, because yours truly has participated in this particular hero's journey. And as the host of this show, I keep my eye out for courageous and inspiring people from all walks of life. Since the mainstream media will only tell its version of what we are as humans, and their version seems to be that as a species, we are weak, violent, dependent victims who need others to tell us what to do, I feel like it is my duty to consistently present my version of humanity, which is filled with love, respect, courage, and fellowship. We will always be presented in a false light by those in mainstream media. Why? Because they don't want us united and inspired and proud. They don't want us living with dignity and walking in the light with one another. If they truly wanted these things for us, then you would find much different stories about us in the newspapers and on the television, would you not? Since they won't tell a true version of our collective hero's journey, then it is up to us humble writers and podcasters to share our story with each other and future generations. And if you ever hear people saying things like, humans are just shitty by nature, or that we are the reason everything is going to shit, and they refuse to acknowledge our enemy or the war we have been immersed in, I challenge you to correct them, as I do. For this attitude towards our fellow humans show the depth of indoctrination in a deeply anti-human narrative, and one that is constantly and consistently pushed in our faces by the bullhorns of mainstream media. Today, we sit down with another courageous human, and one from Kenya. I hope you can hear our common ground and that we are both warriors for Team Human. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Ruth Njagi. Ruth is based in Nairobi, Kenya, and is the founder of A Second Chance Consults, an organization doing excellent work in the area of sexual addiction and recovery. She is also an author and speaker and is passionate about helping facilitate healing for people lost in addiction. Here is my interview with Ruth Njagi. Okay, I am here with Ruth Njagi, author, Kenyan Ruth Njagi. Ruth, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Glad to be here.
I am so excited to talk to you. You know, I found your story. I was super inspired. We're going to get into all that. But I guess my first question is just give the listeners a little bit of a background, kind of where you're from, what size of family you come from, where, you know, what you've done for work and that, just so we know where you're at in the world and where you're at now, where you're recording from. Just kind of give us a little bit of a little bit of a background.
Okay, so I'm from Kenya. I grew up 3 hours away from Nairobi, which is our capital city. Mm-hmm. I have a mom, a dad, and 2 siblings, and 2 brothers and 1 sisters. I don't know, I keep saying that. Yeah. I'm a second born in this family, and that's where I grew up most of my life, like from birth to I think until the time I had to go to university, and that's when I left home for the city. And yeah, and I visit my parents as often as I can. Yeah, so that's me. So for the sake of recording this, I'm right now in the US. I'm in Arkansas, and my purpose for being this trip, for coming to the US, was to attend a sexual integrity leadership summit. And I got to see other people in the field working with addiction, working with recovery, working with spouses, betrayal. And it was so beautiful just meeting other people in the industry.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. And that, so that tees us up a bit. So that, that was the story, that jumped out at me. I had seen your story on, man, I click around on a lot of stuff. I wish I could say I found it here, but I saw, oh, here's this Kenyan woman who's, got this hero's journey where she was addicted to porn. I've been an addict, including porn. I mean, I've had addiction my whole life, which is part of my life story. It's part of my hero's journey, actually. So we'll get into all that. But yeah, I guess one of the things that jumped out at me was that it takes a lot of courage. You know, most people, I would think most people that have porn addiction, they just quietly try to figure out if they can navigate it. Like, they don't come out and say, hey, I'm a porn addict and this is, you know, something that I've battled with or whatever. But I was especially struck because it was a woman. And so that was unusual. And I thought, this woman sounds amazing. You wrote a book. But I guess, like, you know, to start off with, like, how old were you when you first got exposed to pornography? And I guess also, like, did you think you were the only woman that was having this issue? Because it's so stigmatized that it's like, oh, it's a man's addiction. Like, women don't ever get addicted to pornography. That's a guy's addiction. And it's whitewashed. It's almost like, well, men are expected to be, you know, half addicted to pornography. That's so widespread. And we'll talk about the dynamic and the societal stuff later, but I guess just talk about, like, how did you first get exposed to it? And maybe when did you first start going, you know what, I might have a problem with this?
Okay. Oh my goodness.
I know.
I feel like I need to say yes, or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think my life accidentally got set up in a way that I would get addicted to pornography. Mm. So my story is that I was sexually abused as a child. Mm-hmm. And that was one of those things that I kept in me. And also, I come from a setup where people don't process emotions. We don't have vocabularies for emotions. And so there was we went to school, we ate. Basically, we had our basics needs met, finances need met, but emotions, I don't think it's something we, as a society, when I grew up in Kenya, that was discussed about. So we didn't know what to do with anything. So when I got sexually abused, I never told anyone. Mm-hmm. So fast tracking that to high school, I must have been 13 going to 14. And I think I began reading novels. Mills and Boons. I mean, those romantic novels with sex scene and things like that.
Yeah.
And I found them very fascinating for some weird reason. Mm-hmm. And I also found... some people were repelled to it, but I wasn't. And I was like, I wonder what's that about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So fast forward, I finished high school and I had, we call them the gap year. And that's the time I began, like, exploring what we call hardcore pornography, because the novels are considered like softcore pornography. Yeah.
Is this still like you're reading erotica, like books, or are you now kind of clicking on the internet at this point?
So at this point, we were still doing the VHC, those cassettes.
Oh, yeah, the old VHC.
Yeah, it's still before the internet.
Yeah,
And there was just this curiosity that I developed. Somewhere along the way, I know this is very important, and because it's the basis of why it was important for me to stop. Mm-hmm. And somewhere in that space, I gave my life to Christ. I became a Christian. Mm-hmm. And then I was informed that we Christians behave in a different way. And so I think that's where the hiding started. And I could still access the pornography, but very hidden, and nobody knew about it. And then now when I finally went to Nairobi, I got access to the internet pornography. And that was like, I don't know, being in a supermarket for the first time, you know,
oh,
you're
yeah.
just going like, oh my God, oh my God, there's so much to choose from. So I had two lives where I was a Christian on one day, and then, yeah, at one point I was also indulging in this, and it was very hidden for so many years.
That's also there's a dynamic there. So you're younger than me, but still, because of growing up in Kenya, your first exposure wasn't on the internet. It was the same thing for me. I'm a lot older, but my first exposure, I mean, it was just like, you know, we all had like, dads had Playboy magazine. I mean, there was like two magazines when I was a kid, like, and if your dad, you know, and it was like you know, it was kept in the, you know, closet, you know? And so, you know, my brother and I would go sneak peeks of, you know, these beautiful women that, you know, and it was like, whoa, it was like thunderstruck, you know, like, whoa, like the beauty of these women, like you couldn't even believe it. It wasn't available anywhere else. Like there was no computers. They sold these magazines at the 7-Eleven, but nobody was going to go in there and buy them because you might bump into like your mom's best friend or something, like, or your history teacher. Like, you're like, there's no way I'm going in there to try to procure more pornography. That's not happening. So fast forward to the internet, and oh my God, did that happen fast? Like, it went from, you know, there was some bikini nude pictures to this giant juggernaut of imagery, and it was just readily available. And also, any kink that you might have, you know, I'm not like judging anybody's kink, you know, but it's like any, you know, midgets, you know, it's just like anything you like or you're curious about, there is like a million images just and it's free at the click. And so for anybody that was like, you know, oh, what's this, or you know, and it was just there. And so, yeah, I just wanted to point out the changing dynamic. And if you are predisposed to watching imagery of, you know, sex or whatever it is that you like, the internet's like, oh, we've got a million of those pictures. Oh, you like that there? Oh, there's a million of those too. Just click here on this portal, right? And so. Now, you know, if you have a predilection to addictive behavior or compulsive behavior, you know, you're in the deep end of the pool, right?
Yes, that's so true, because right now it's so readily available. It's free. I mean, not free, but free in a sense. Because all you need is your data, and you have your data for school, for other things. So, and it's anonymous. Nobody can see you. Nobody can tell. So it's very, it's very prevalent right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what did you find that, like you had mentioned earlier that, you know, you grew up in a country, like if the basic needs were met, that's good. So it's like, it's not common to, you know, go into therapy about sexual, you know, trauma or addiction. No, nobody's really doing that. Maybe they are now in Nairobi a little bit or whatever, but that it wasn't in the culture. It's a little bit more in the culture that I'm in on the West Coast of a highly developed nation. But what did you find as you started to process all of this stuff? What did you find that it was covering up? Like, what was the addictive behavior? What was underneath it for you besides, like, what were the affect? What kind of negative affect was kind of underneath, you know, going and using pornography?
So I think looking back, those elements of like loneliness that were at the core, There were elements of unworthiness that were at the core, elements of so I don't know how to explain this without looking like I'm crazy, but I didn't know how to prioritize myself.
Right.
So because like I had been taught or conditioned somehow that other people's needs came before mine.
Mm-hmm.
So this was my sanctuary, for lack of a better word. This was my place of relief. This was my place of just being, you know, exam. It was my safe space. Unfortunately, my safe space became a prison over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I didn't even realize it became a prison until one day I was like, you know what? I think I want to be serious with Jesus. I want to be serious with God. And I need to stop this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized I'm not able to stop. It had become part of my life. Yeah.
Yep.
So it was a very interesting realization and shocking.
Yeah. I think that's really well said, actually, about it being a safe space. I'm just going to say a couple things and see if it resonates with you. So one of the things that I noticed about addiction, it doesn't matter. And I've struggled with a bunch of different addictions, like because I'm an addict, and I you know, there's good and bad about being an addict. Like I feel like I'm predisposed to kind of self-sabotage, but essentially I think addicts are really highly sensitive feeling people. The reason that I cover up with alcohol, cigarettes, drugs, porn, like just name the process or substance that I have struggled with, it's always covering up that all the uncomfortable affect. So I wasn't sexually abused as a child, but what it covers up, the woundedness it covers up for me, is this kind of loneliness or this unworthiness. I think it does. It doesn't really cover it up. It actually binds me to these negative affects. So there's the young child in me that's wounded wants to run away from restlessness, boredom, loneliness, unworthiness, things aren't happening fast enough. Like any, that kind of sense of wanting to run away from what's happening internally for me has me reach, or used to have me reach, for pornography or a drinking or cigarettes or whatever to seek relief and a dopamine rush from feeling like I'm being overwhelmed with restlessness, boredom, loneliness, all the different affects that seem to be creeping into my awareness, creeping into my body, mind, experience. And so I use those things, including porn, to give me a relief valve. Like you said, it's a safe space, but it's a, and not to be condemning myself, because I want to have self-love and self-forgiveness, but, and we'll get into the Christ piece and all that in just a sec here, but it actually binds those negative affects to me, because I'm also ashamed that I can't get out of the loop. So the loop itself, the safe space of, let's say, pornography, since that's what we're talking about, it also has me keep experiencing the same kind of, now, you know, I'm out of the loop of loneliness because I'm in the safe space, but now I'm feeling like I've got to deal with the shame and guilt of like, dude, you're still doing this bullshit, right? Does that resonate with you?
Yes, I think with, and I know I'm going before hard with the story with the, my partners, Forgiven Match Ministries, with whom I'm affiliated with. They are based in Chattanooga, Georgia or Tennessee. They're just by the border there. So part of what I've been learning is something we call the cycle of addiction and the cycle of recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the cycle of addiction is based on shame. And so first of all, you are in shame before you enter into addiction, but then the cycle of preoccupation, rituals, acting out, despair, the more you do this, the more shame comes into place. And I know it's ironic because when we want to escape our life, for example, let's say life is stressful or things are not going as expected, we are disappointed over something, and then now we escape. But what we are escaping on still causes further shame.
Yes.
So it's self-sabotage, as you said. Yes, there's a very big element of self-sabotage. So that in itself causes further shame as we go. Yeah, being unable to get out of the hole we have dug ourselves over the years.
Yeah.
Or the prison that we put ourselves into and, I don't know, threw away the key. And now we have to get ourselves out of this. Yeah. So that is very interesting. Yeah.
Well, and I also think, especially for men, I can't speak for women, but I think it's different for women because I think pornography addiction is dominantly male, right? A lot of the material is you know, the male id, the male fantasy that you see. Basically, it's driven. The industry is run by men. But I think like it's seen as a quote unquote harmless addiction. Like, oh yeah, men like porn. Yeah, there's, you know, there's bikini fitness models all over the place. And so it's seen as just part of the culture. Like, I don't even have to really look around. Like, I can be on ESPN checking the baseball score, and maybe because I've clicked on porn and I've clicked on a fitness model, you know, IG profile or whatever, they will push stuff towards me that they think I might want to click on. The algorithm knows, oh, he likes pretty women. Here, you know, let's throw these over here with the baseball score, see if we can get his attention over here. And so it doesn't seem very harmless to me. In fact, it seems targeted. You know, I don't want to get all conspiratorial, but it definitely is something, you know, I don't really view it as anything harmless at all. In fact, that's why I'm doing these episodes and why I've done episodes on this particular topic is I want men that are maybe predisposed to, you know, think of porn as like it's a harmless addiction to maybe reframe it or take a fresh look at it as something that is, you know, I had Dr. Bob Baer on. He says, you know, the process addictions, sometimes like pornography, sometimes love addiction, sex addiction, those, you know, if you're an addict of alcohol and drugs and cigarettes or whatever, you tend to gravitate over to those because those seem like quote unquote harmless, but you still have to deal with all the underlying dynamics that you have tried to run away from with the other addictions, right? Mm-hmm. And so I guess like my question is, do you see it as a harmless addiction? Is a little bit like some people would say, well, I only do it a little bit once in a while, but and I had Wendy Maltz on, I can't remember what she said. She said, you know, you, if you're just honestly doing it a little once in a while, like a glass of wine every couple weeks, then no, I don't think it's a big problem. But the problem with addicts is they don't do a little bit. You know, I don't do a little bit of anything. I never have. And so for me, it's a massive justification if I'm like, you know, it's like none or doing it. Because if I do it a little bit, just like with alcohol, I don't drink alcohol anymore because I can't do a little bit. So I guess I wanted to ask you about that. Like, do you have people that are, you've been to this conference and people are, you know, pouring their hearts out and talking about it. Is there a space where do you think people could do healthy and do a little bit, or is it just kind of like, just stay away from it because it just leads to a whole bunch of bad stuff?
I think when we're looking at pornography, we have three people in this game. We have the viewer, we have the maker of the pornography, and we have the participant.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as the viewer keep creating demand, then you need to consider all the other factors. Somebody is getting very, very rich.
yeah.
At your expense. And also somebody may also be getting very harmed at your expense.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, with a retro here, a retro there, it's a slow fade. That's the best example, but it's like just doing, like going back slowly. You're not aware, but you're sleeping. You're just sliding down the hill. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that you don't know when you become an addict, mm-hmm. when you become totally dependent on these things. Because like I said, in the cycle of recovery, there's something that becomes a ritual. And so when you're looking at rituals, these are things you do almost subconsciously. Like you have a ritual for morning before you go for work. The things you do, you don't think about them, but you do them. Mm-hmm. And so you find that maybe the times when you watch pornography, over time it becomes a ritual. You're like, oh yeah, I come from work, I do this, I watch pornography, I go to bed. You know, it becomes part and part of your life.
Totally.
And it's such a subtle backward journey that you don't even recognize it.
It's a great point.
So as Ruth, this is my take. I think it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. That's as me, because I found it dangerous.
Totally.
But also, the question is why do you need that ritual? What are you trying to get out of it? Because until you ask your why, then we don't know what we cannot tell, is it dangerous for you or not? But you have to ask why do I need to watch porn?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And yeah, I think there's that first layer of, well, it's harmless. You're not really looking at the participants, to your point, right? I remember seeing a great video of somebody that was talking about the experience of the participants, and you're just like, oh God. I mean, it's just made you never want to touch it, really. And participate in that system. You know, that first layer, when you're in denial, you know, you're basically saying, oh, pornography is not a big deal. I just do it to get my yayas out, right? It's like saying when you're drinking, I just have a couple of drinks to unwind. And that's the justification. And I think you kind of internally, you know, that it could be you're coming into a problem, but you're still justifying. You're still saying, guys do this, it's no big deal. Or I'm drinking a little, it's no big deal. Even though maybe your partner, your wife is starting to say, hey, you know, you seem to be doing this almost every night. You're protecting yourself and you're trying to justify like it's not a problem yet. But the pattern's already being set. It's already kind of hooked you. You know, like to your point earlier, you've already created the ritual and so it's become ritualized and you're like, oh, this is my time to surf porn or this is my time to drink. And we all do that. I don't know if all humans are predisposed to addiction. I think you and I have it. And I think I bet if you were to divide up all humans, regardless of gender, race, country, nationality, all that stuff, religion, you know, I don't know what the numbers would be on people who are predisposed to addiction of all sorts and those that aren't. But it's got to be, you know, to me, I don't know if anybody's ever done a study, but it's got to be well over half are like us, I would think. I don't know about you. I used to think I was the only one that struggled with all these things. But then the more books I read, the more therapy I got in, the more conversations I had, I'm like, you know, and the more more I observe people's behavior and I see addictive behavior all over the place, you know, like most people displaying it. Including now a technological addiction. I see it in my son with his phone, and I see all of us, we can't put our phones down. We can't stop looking at stuff on the internet and not even pornography. I just think we're predisposed to like, I'm feeling a little bored. What's my phone got to say to me? Right. So now you're seeing the dopamine go to the iPhone. And you may not be looking for porn. Maybe you're clicking on TikTok. Maybe you're clicking on the new, whatever it is that your new kink is. Now you're doing that instead of just being with that, you know, I don't feel so great today. I feel a little bored. I feel a little lonely. I feel a little unworthy, rather than sit with it and maybe pray or maybe do meditation or whatever process you like to do to self-soothe, you go right into the addiction, which is the phone. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, you're very correct in saying that, because as you are talking that, I can't remember who has said this, but right now the attention span of a human being, an adult, is 8 seconds. Within 8 seconds.
That's terrible.
the good fish has better attention than us at this point. I don't know who said that, but you can search it online.
Oh my God.
And it's because we need something new every 8 seconds. We need something. And we also live in this very fast-paced life that something has to be going, like what's going on in your life. It's almost like we are on a go. We don't enjoy being still. We don't enjoy our thoughts. We don't enjoy going, oh, why am I uncomfortable? Why am I, you know, it's almost like we don't want any pain. We don't want anything that is unpleasant. And so we'll do everything in our power to, you know, escape that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, the whole, I have found too, and we'll talk about your path, like what was the healing path? Underneath all this, like for me, it's always comes down to forgiveness, self-forgiveness. Like it's a major, if you struggle with addiction, you always come back around to forgiving yourself for, you know, the countless times you've tried to self-soothe through processes or, you know, substances. You know, for me, my path as an addict has been a massive opportunity for me to forgive myself on a day-to-day basis, really, and week-to-week basis, and just be gentle with myself, because underneath it is a child, a wounded child that desperately wants to self-soothe and feel safe. And for me, it also has come through my faith in God, my faith in Christ. That has been a circular journey for me as I looked for God and spirituality. I've always had a deep faith in God, but I was, you know, when I was younger, I was looking at the wisdom traditions of the East, and the last, say, 5 to 10 years, I've come all the way back around to having like a Christ-centered faith. And it's not an accident that the work I'm doing on my own healing and Jesus Christ, who's got this unbelievable forgiveness energy that he is providing, they go hand in hand. So I think it's a really beautiful path. And I'll let you speak about your own journey in how have you forgiven yourself, and how have you arrived at back at Christianity, I guess, and what has that provided you with healing this particular part of yourself?
Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to explain. So I had two agendas to want to recover. Mm. So one was my faith in Christ, because I knew I wasn't living right. I knew, I didn't need anyone to tell me. I just knew this is not it. This is counterfeit. This is, you know, I knew that. Yeah. And the other one was I wanted to be normal, because I was absolutely sure pornography is a man thing and there's something wrong with me because I'm a woman.
Sure.
And I just wanted to be normal. Those were my two main reasons to want to stop.
Yeah.
So I think now where I needed to, because what happened is when I said, oh, I need to stop this, I thought it was easy. I thought it would be like, yeah, stop.
Snap your fingers and you'd be done, right?
Yes, I thought it would be like, just magic, just click. I didn't know how much invested I was at harming myself. Mm-hmm. And so I thought the reversal process would be just so easy. And I think that's where, for me, self-loathing happened, and just this intense hatred of and shame of, why can't I stop?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm not talking to anybody about it at this point. I'm trying it on my own. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a mess on top of a mess.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Like it's, I don't know. What do we call this? Quicksand. It's almost like you're trying to get yourself out of a quicksand, but you're not getting help from other people. Yeah. Actually, that's the best scenario to describe this. But over the years, I had to start talking to people about the addiction.
Yeah.
And that was one of the hardest things I'd ever done, being like, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
There's this big secret I have. And my fear was if I shared, I would be rejected.
Of course. Yeah.
I would be hated. And I'm so grateful that the Lord brought the right person for me, because the person I shared this with, she didn't know what to do with me, because again, foreign concept. But she, I think what she did that was so gracious was she treated me the way she had previously. She didn't change how she treated me. She didn't like avoid me. We just moved on. Like I said, oh, I had coffee or something like that. She didn't reject me. And that for me was a very good thing, because my fear all this time to share was I'll be rejected. And so that was broken. And then I talked to someone else. And then I talked to someone else, you know, things like that. And I think it took me a number of years to actually get somebody to be like, hey, talk to me about your story. Because people didn't have the capacity. They didn't know what to do with me. But then many years later, I think like 4 years later, since I talked to the first person, I met somebody who said, hey, Ruth, what's your story? How did you even get started with on your journey of sex or sexuality? And now we had to talk about being sexually abused and things like that. So it was going back to the very painful things. But I think one thing is that people get harmed by people, but they also get healed by people.
Absolutely.
You cannot heal in isolation.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think that what you said there is really valuable, because you opened up to this pastor expecting to be rejected. Your fear was that she was going to treat you differently and see you as, you were tainted, or there was something wrong with you that she had to turn away. But all of those feelings were just your own kind of your own fears, you know, like I can't tell people about this addiction because they'll reject me. But it was really your own. You didn't want to, you know, forgive yourself yet. And you were trying it on with these, you know, this woman that's a powerful pastor. And then you're like, oh, wait, she still treats me the same. She still loves me unconditionally. She still accepts me. Mm-hmm. And so that's how it starts. And you're right. It's such a common thing to have a process addiction like pornography that it heals the whole tribe, the whole human tribe, to talk about it with other people, whether it's on a podcast or just one-on-one with a therapist. And this is true for alcohol, you know, any of the substances, but it's also true for the processes like love and sex addiction. You being courageous enough to be authentic about the struggles you're having is what opens the door to people recognizing that, hey, I've got the same thing, or I went through that with this other thing that sounds an awful lot like what you're going through. It's like this, the human heart has this trauma and this woundedness that we internalize it. We have to hide our wounds from each other, when in fact, that is the very thing that bonds us together in fellowship and in a healing. And it's super powerful. I'm so grateful that you have come on today and shared your story, and you're just really courageous and in your heart. I really love what you're standing for, and I just know you're going to do great things. Where can people find you? You wrote the book Love Unlimited, which is a small book, but it tells your story and where you found resources and stuff. I think it's really good. Where can people find you, the book, and maybe what you might be doing next? Where do you want to point people to go click and find out more about what you're doing and find the book?
Yes. So my book is readily found on Amazon. Mm-hmm. I know my name is is not a quick name to name, but it's just if you click Ruth Njagi, N-J-A-G-I, mm-hmm. you'd find my book quite easily. And again, like Tony has said, it's a small book, and that book shares my personal story. It doesn't talk about recovery, but I just shared my story because I think when I was trying to recover, I found people speaking from theory perspective, research done, but I had never seen the story humanized.
Right.
I had never had people say, hey, this is my journey, this is what I want to. And I know some people have read my book and they're like, no, Ruth, this is not your story, this is my story. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, first of all, it's supposed to take care of all those people. I mean, just for people to realize they're not alone in this, to understand. And for people who have no idea what someone in addiction is going through, to just hopefully glimpse at the turmoil.
Right.
Yeah, because, I mean, part of that book is from my journals, and they were very personal. I never knew I would share my journals because I thought, I mean, they would bring me shame.
Sure.
But just writing that story has empowered so many people. I speaking about my story has empowered so many people to have the courage to speak out. And I think it's Revelation that says they overcame him by the brand of the lamp, by the power of their testimonies. Everybody has a story, and there's no shame in sharing your story, because when we share our story, we are giving God glory, because it wasn't me, it was Jesus in me, and the people that he brought in my life, the books I read, the music I listened to that helped me, you know, like it takes a village.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it takes a village. So all these factors are into praise. So how people can find me, the easiest way is through forgivenmatchministry.org. There's a page that talks about me, mostly my work in Africa, my work in Kenya. And we have workshops, there's so much going on, because we need people to have the courage to speak. We need people to learn to process emotions mm-hmm. easily. And I think other mentionables I could use for people here is ministries like Be Broken. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Be Broken. I think it's based mostly in Texas. We have Border Recovery in Colorado. We have these are some of the people I met at the conference. So
yeah,
I know them some little bit, but yeah. I think for your people, for the people listening in America, I promise you, you have so much resources that I am jealous. As a Kenyan, I am so jealous because you have so many resources. We have so many people working from a point of faith in your recovery journey. So help is available. Help is always available. And a place where you will not be judged. You will not be, you know, you'll be loved. And at the end of the day, love covers a multitude of sins. Love covers a multitude of sins. It did that. My book is titled Love Unlimited, Set Free by a Greater Love. Because love does cover a multitude of sin. And I mean, yeah.
Well, it sounds like you might be doing a Forgive Much Ministries in Kenya. You'll be spearheading that.
So it's yes. Not, you know, yes, I mean, yes, I mean,
who,
yes.
Who better than you to go back to your homeland and to help people in all walks of life with whatever addiction they're having? I think you're super courageous, and you're in your heart. So Ruth, thanks so much for coming on Basecamp for Men and sharing your story and sharing your insight and your wisdom. We just really appreciate you. Come back anytime. If you get something else going on and you're getting ready to launch a project, please reach out and come back and talk to us about what you got going on. Just really want to keep tabs on you, and we're cheering for you. And we just really thank you for being a courageous human. I think when people behave courageously, and tell their stories of their own hero's journey, I believe it strengthens the whole human tribe across, you know, continents, across skin, race, sexual preferences. I just think as we tell our own courageous stories, it just helps everyone. So thank you so much for coming on Basecamp and sharing your story today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, Tony.
Well, I hope you enjoyed meeting Ruth Njagi as much as I did. We've got some great interviews coming up in the next couple weeks, one with my friend Whitney Mason and another with writer Zoe O'Toole, who edited the book Turtles All the Way Down, a book we're going to break down. Really looking forward to those. Thank you, Base Campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.